from WBEZ in Chicago. This is The Morning Shift. I'm Jen White. Argonne National Laboratory is celebrating its 70th anniversary. The Science and Engineering Research Center has had a prominent place in historical research developments. Some of the brand new research will be powered by supercomputers, all with very cool names. With us now is Catherine Riley, Director of Science for the Leadership Computing Facility. Catherine, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here.
So we have Theta, Aurora, Mira, all very feminine names. How do you choose these names?
For the most part, we look for something inspiring, right? We want it to be inspiring and easy to remember, right? Because we want people to be able to access them and remember what we're talking about. But really, it's the inspiring. So in this side, we're really looking for, you know, sort of celestial bodies, celestial things that are really inspiring as we're looking to the sky.
Now, the supercomputer Theta, that's the newest one, and it's being installed at the laboratory.
Correct.
Explain when we say supercomputer, what is that super part?
That's a great question. So in the end, right, they share a lot of similarities with your laptop. But the difference is instead of one computer, right, your laptop or your phone, we're talking about tens of thousands of them all working together. And so the most challenging part of a supercomputer is actually getting them all to work together. And so there's a lot of technology focused on getting all of those parts of the computer working together, kind of like a factory, right? When you're trying to build a computer, It is true, though, the factory they use for computers, but like trying to build a car, everybody's working together, right? They understand what the other people are building or the other robots are building, depending, right? And putting these all together so they all fit together correctly at the end. And that's kind of what a supercomputer needs to do. It needs to understand what the other parts of the computer are doing, be able to talk and coordinate.
So if we're thinking about it in terms of Theta versus my iPhone or my laptop, how much more powerful is a supercomputer?
It's one way you could think about it is that if you were trying to do something that took you a month even on your phone, it might take a second on one of these supercomputers. That's assuming, right, you know, that you could pull it on and do what you need to do to get it to run on one of these supercomputers. The other way to think about it, the other direction, is that a supercomputer can do in a second or in a month what you can't even imagine doing on a phone, because you can't even represent the problem, right? Like you can take a picture and put it on your iPhone and you can fill up, you know, with how many thousands depending on which model you bought. But you would not be able to put all of those photos from a supercomputer onto your phone, right? They would be able to hold so much more. And so there's this other direction that there's even problems you can't solve on your phone.
So it's a storage issue then?
It's not just a storage issue, but it's one way to think about it, right? So storage is an easy one because I think everybody thinks about their photos. They have a sense of how many photos or films they have. But it's also how hard it is to solve the problem. So there's also a calculation component.
So then what I'm hearing you say is that it expands the human capacity for imagining problems to solve.
I think so, very much so. It's that critical difference between getting an answer in half an hour versus 6 months. And you can ask much more complicated questions, much more interesting questions, innovate your questions when you can start getting questions and answers quickly. Think about it like trying to talk to somebody over the phone. If you had to wait six months to get an answer from someone on the other side of the planet, right? Your conversation's going to be pretty slow. You're not going to go as in-depth. You might not have as deep of a conversation versus if you're sitting in the same room talking back and forth.
So give us some sense of scale here, because the Theta is the bridge between the current supercomputer, that's Mira.
Correct.
And then a new supercomputer is coming in 2018, that's Aurora. So from Mira to Theta, how much more powerful is Theta?
So actually, Theta is very similar in power to Mira. Aurora is going to take a 20x jump. So it's going to be 20 times more powerful than Mira or Theta. Theta is coming on board because we're sort of switching families. We're switching collaborators. Who's building this machine? And so we're using this as, one, a transition machine so that we understand how to interact with this new architecture and this new family. But also as a stepping stone, it's got a different architecture. It's got different features which are helping the science take steps to the next generations of computers, which are going to be different. which are asking more out of how we do the science, out of how we write the code that actually runs on these computers. Mm-hmm. So Theta provides that bridge and allows us to do experiments that we wouldn't be able to do on Mira today.
So I think when we think about supercomputers and how they appear in films, it's this vast room with just, you know, walls of white boxes and things whirling. How big are these computers actually?
That's a great question. And I will tell you that if you look at the room with Mira and what Theta is literally being installed this week, it arrived on boxes on Monday, that it is a big giant room with big white walls and big white floors. And so these are big. I mean, if you think about a refrigerator, right, that's about the right sense for what we call a rack. But you might have 48 racks, say, building up Mira. So we have 48 big, think of your big refrigerator.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay.
that are all put into rows, and that makes up Mira. And that is smaller for Theta because Theta is newer, it's new technology. That's going to be actually substantially smaller in terms of footprint than Mira will be. Aurora will be similar to what we're looking at with Mira.
So talk a little bit about the kind of research Theta will be used for.
Yeah, that's an exciting one for me. There's a wide variety of problems. This is one of the coolest things about supercomputers. It's not that we're just using it for one thing. You know, this is going to be doing work on improving safety, right? So if we're thinking about industrial safety, right? Explosions, places where things go wrong. We're studying industrial safety. We're studying better ways to design wind turbines in aerodynamics, right? So we want wind turbines that get more power and are quieter, right? So we're looking at how we can design the blades of those wind turbines more effectively. How can we design the shape of cars or of airplanes to be more aerodynamic so they're quieter and more fuel efficient? We're looking at the climate, right? We're trying to understand how the climate behaves. So Theta will be used to really do sort of the next generation of studies in climate and potentially even in regional climate, which is sort of more what you might think of as weather. Also, we're looking at a lot of biology problems, right? So this is able to tackle questions not just in, you know, how your cells work, right? So how the surface around your cells, right? How does that work? How does it control what goes in and out of your cells? But even how do we design better drugs? How do we fight cancer, right? These are big questions that we're actually going to be running on Theta, trying to understand how we tackle curing cancer as part of even the national initiative.
So when we talk about, for instance, the health research, how would Theta be used specifically? What kind of data would be entered into the computer?
That's a great question. So there's a variety of different things. So let's say we're looking at drug design, right? We're trying to improve the kind of drugs. We have huge databases of materials, like of the, you know, sort of parts of drugs, right? And if you want to design the most effective drug to fight a disease, you might look at all of those different parts of drugs and figure out, well, what parts can I put together to design the most effective drug? And if I can screen those, if I can test those on a computer, maybe I can get an answer in a day or in a week that I might have had to spend a year, right, you know, sort of experimenting with different combinations or relying on intuition. I can go through this huge screening. So that's basically this big database of nuclear structures, right? So that's one example.
How important is the human element, though, when it comes to working with supercomputers? Because it sounds like almost you can just sort of input data and let it run amok, but where's the human factor?
That's where I come in.
Okay.
In respect, right? So these are cutting-edge machines. These are not the hardware that's on your laptop, right? These are brand new technology in terms of every part of the machine, what the CPU is, right, the core that does the calculations, how it's all connected, how it's all synchronized. And we actually have a large staff. The whole point of that staff is to collaborate with scientists to understand how we can write their code to most efficiently use the machine. Because, as I said, these are bleeding edge. Most of the time when we install a machine, we're talking about, you know, not even just serial number one. Sometimes it's like serial number 0.9.
Mm. Wait, now explain that, because that went right over my head.
I apologize, right? So what I mean is that sometimes these machines haven't even been fully built before you put them on the floor, because they're so big that the vendor actually needs to use your, what we call a machine room, right, which is the big white room where it lives, to put them together. And so they're coming in, installing it right, you know, right with you at that time. And so you're going through the debugging process and evaluation. It's not like getting the finished product that you hope with your MacBook or your laptop, right? That works smoothly and well, knock on wood. we've got to dive into it and really collaborate to make it work.
So you're part engineer but part interpreter?
In part, yeah. This is a subfield. Not even just computational science, like so doing science on a computer, but supercomputing has its own language, you know, personal language, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like every field of science has its own lingo. And using that requires a lot of skill. And in that way, you're really translating to use it on the computer. You're translating your science.
Like I mentioned, this is the 70th anniversary of Argonne. Tell me a little bit about the history of the lab.
Yeah, the lab was actually born out of the University of Chicago in Hyde Park. And if people are unaware, the University of Chicago had the first sustained nuclear reaction as part of the Manhattan Project. And so they actually had that on site in Hyde Park in 1942.
Wow.
But what was realized was that there was a real chance that nuclear energy could have a civilian use as an energy source. So nuclear power plants. So the lab was born to explore how nuclear energy could be used for civilian power. And that was the first mission when the lab grew and has now evolved into sort of a larger lab really focused generally on energy and improving life.
I've been speaking with Catherine Wiley. She's the Director of Science for the Leadership Computing Facility at Argonne National Library. Catherine, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you very much.
We're building a supercomputer in the backyard and singing about it, and gee, we worked up the plan so it came.